Woodworkers for the Blind presents Taylor Howell, former blind bareback rider, football player, and now rancher and woodworker.
And you can find Woodworkers for the Blind on the web at ww4b.org. A lot of blind and visually impaired woodworkers sharing ideas, thoughts, projects, and a lot of how-to-dos. Now our host, Daryl Vickers, will take it away.
I got a new saw stop table saw came in this last week.
When I turned 18, I actually professionally rodeoed. I was a bareback rider. I'm looking into getting some better stuff to make more accurate cuts, make the finished product a little better where it's worth some people's hard-earned money to want to pay for it. So,
right, yeah.
It's a lot of just sensing. It's a lot of kind of like using a table saw. If you think you might get yourself in trouble trying to cut something too thin and you're uncomfortable with it, odds are it's probably best to try to figure out something different, right?
Oh, Jeff, you can't hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
You're 5 degrees warmer than we are right now, Jeff.
We got a tornado watch.
Ooh.
But I'm dedicated. Anything for Daryl.
Yeah.
You're going to clutch onto that microphone to the last second, huh?
You bet. I'm going to put that under the desk, and I'm going to run out and put all my... I just made 15 butterfly houses. I'll hide them under the workbench.
Oh, good for you. Have you ever seen... Well... Obviously not, but butterflies.
Before I lost my vision.
How do you know if butterflies are using these things?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Mary Lee wanted me to make sure that the wood I used was not going to harm the butterflies. And so I did a whole search thing on it. And I found this whole study that was done by some state. I can never pronounce the word.
It was a guy, right?
Yes.
I found the same thing. Actually, there are two guys, two different areas, and they said they found nothing but spiders and maybe a moth or something.
That's what I found.
Okay. But I never built these to attract butterflies. I grow flowers.
Ah.
Pollinators. They come for all that. And by the way, I have a lighthouse my son gave me a long time ago that has solar on it, and it lights up at night. And I've never had a ship come through my yard.
They haven't made it that far up the Mississippi. Huh?
Yeah. But it's just the thing. It's a nice looking piece of...
It's yard art.
Yard art.
Yeah, yard art.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to the June chat call. A couple of quick announcements before we get started. But anyway, how is Jeff doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Been talking to Bob here, and Bob's trying to do some recording of your angle.
The Wixie angle gauge.
Yeah, something you attach to... your miter saw, set an angle, dial it in. I'm excited about it. I haven't gotten one of those yet, so
excited. They are wonderful.
What have you been waiting for, sir?
Exactly.
And Bob's recording. Pretty neat device that you can use in all sorts of situations.
Yeah, it comes in handy for setting your saw angle. Our guest tonight is Taylor Howard. I'm going to bring him in here in just a little bit. A couple of quick announcements. The last time I sent out for last month's call, I guess I could... created a little confusion. Imagine that. I said I was going to give an update status of WW4B. And really what I meant was that our membership, since we've started doing these podcasts, not quite a year, almost a year now, our membership's increased by about 13 people, which is pretty good because we have 157 right now total. If I've got all the people off that passed away, there might be one or two there still, but for the most part. So it's, we've been reaching some more people. We had when Taylor joined a couple of weeks ago, and same day, two other people joined that day. So, I'm kind of excited about that because all we're trying to do here is reach woodworkers and our people who might have an interest in woodworking. So, we're making some progress. So, that's good. I'm kind of excited about that. But that's really what that whole status thing was about, was just the membership picking up. Also, want to bring up the small box challenge, since only one person has told me that they are definitely participating, which I kind of asked everybody, that wants to participate to drop me an email or something, just so I get some kind of idea. Guys, I'd really like to get maybe, we got a bunch of woodworkers here that I just like for as many people as possible to participate in this. So I hope everybody's thinking about it. It's a deadline is going to be for getting them to me will be September 15th. It'll be here before we know it. I haven't started mine yet either, so that's okay.
Would a butterfly house be considered a box?
Yes.
Got me thinking now.
A box is a box. So I'm going down my list. I actually typed out a list here so I wouldn't forget things. Because if I don't write it down, man, I can't keep a thought in my head for 30 seconds. So I have a new addition to my family, and I'm pretty excited about, because I've only put it off and thought about it for the last over 10 years. I got a new saw stop table saw came in this last week, and I actually got it to turn on today. So we're making progress.
Wow.
Pretty excited about that, because my old table saw was just wouldn't cut straight anymore. And I can't figure out why it didn't, but I just finally said it. Yeah. My biggest thing is I research things to death. So I've looked at table saws forever, and I wanted a cabinet saw. So it was kind of like between three of them. And I figured, well, for a few $100 more, I get the safety thing and with the saw stop. I made one cut with it today. It was very pretty. Hopefully it'll all be good. But it's been quite the challenge getting it all going. My brother and a friend of mine came over and put it together, because I got to tell you, there's a lot of stuff to put together. And then I'm missing a box that had the handles for raising and lowering the blade and setting the blade angle. And the blade wrenches, I don't have those. So they're shipping them to me, and I'm supposed to have them Thursday. So that's one of the reasons I haven't went crazy trying to do anything. Like I said, I kind of, you know, I tightened the blade sort of as best I could today, but I'm not doing anything too radical till I get some wrenches. Anyway, I'm excited to get started with that. So hopefully my woodworking will improve somewhat.
Which saw stop did you get?
So I got the 1 3/4 horse. I think it's called a TS175. And then I've got the Easy Glide Biesmeyer fence. And thank God for Walker, because I was telling him what I was getting, and I didn't realize that I didn't have the right, when I sent him the link to it, I didn't have the right fence system picked out. So I would have been really aggravated if I got it with the wrong fence. So there again, anybody that knows me knows I need a keeper, and Mr. Walker is one of my keepers. I have several. But basically, it's the same exact footprint almost as my other saw as far as shop space. I didn't need a 3-horsepower industrial saw or anything like that. So this one is a little smaller footprint than that one is. But width-wise and everything, my old rigid cut 36 inches. So it pretty much fits right where the other old one was. So I haven't had to do a lot of rearranging, which was another big concern of mine, because I don't have a lot of space. Anyway, I'll give everybody some updates on it when I get to, or I could use it a little bit more. But that was pretty exciting.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. I have such a tight one. I have a real hard time. I can spend money on other people, but I have a really hard time spending money on myself. But it's just,
Can you tell the listeners who may not know what the SawStop special feature is?
Oh, sure. Well, SawStop is a brand of saw, but its claim to fame is it has a break that if you touch the blade, it will stop that blade. It has technology in it that will, almost like a gun going off, I guess, and it will stop that blade within just a couple of milliseconds. So if you go out on YouTube, they actually have a demonstration where they show it with a hot dog, and it didn't even hardly, I don't think it even broke the skin of the hot dog. I think it just kind of scratched it. And believe me, I'm one of these people that already have a sharp finger from a table saw. And I did that back when I could still see. So they've always made me nervous. So I'm not going to take it for granted, but it's pretty great technology. And I think that a lot of talk this year about the U.S. government kind of maybe mandating that this technology be on all future saws. That was another reason to go ahead and get it. The cool thing is that SawStop, the guy that invented this saw, sold the company to Festool. Doesn't say it, but it really is a Festool company. But I guess he must have kept the license for the technology, because to make all the saw manufacturers stop complaining is he's just going to give them the technology without them having to buy a license. So there really won't be any excuse for any saw not to have this technology, really. You have to pay the cost of building it and using that technology, but you don't have to pay a license to the guy. I thought that was pretty darn generous myself. So it's right now the only saw on the market that has this technology.
I believe the technology really is that when it gets a circuit through it, conducted through your skin, that instant, the brake slams the arbor, the blade, it disappears down, and then you have to replace that brake system.
Right. The brake is like a little cartridge, and it's in the back, and it hits that blade. If it says if the blade is up pretty high and you do it, it will drop the whole assembly, but if it's otherwise, it'll just stop it if it's just a little up off the table.
Oh, okay.
And I always thought it would probably destroy the blade, but when I look at this cartridge in there, it's kind of shaped like the blade, and I don't know that some people said it doesn't, hasn't hurt the blade. So maybe it does, and maybe it doesn't. But, you know, if you set it off, you got, the cartridge is $118, and then if you blow your blade, and you got an expensive one, that's another expense, but you haven't lost any digits or any fingers or any of that good stuff. So
there you go.
It's a pretty cool technology, and it's got us some other stuff. Like I said, when I get more familiar with it, I'll talk about it a little bit more. But Dennis Walker, there's some other guys on this list that have had them for quite a while. So I know Lenny McHugh has one. So like I said, I've looked at them for a long time. I've looked at new table saws and just didn't want to crank out the money. But when you get aggravated enough, but the saw wasn't, I saw it just wasn't performing. It's been a good saw, but it just wasn't performing anymore the way I wanted it to. So it was time for a change.
It's good.
This is Jim King. Could I say a little bit about the saw stop? I have one. I have had it trip a couple of three times on me. I have one of them, the blade with a cartridge embedded in the blade, hanging on the wall in the shop just to remind people the kind of power that these saws have. And I'm like you. I know it's there, but boy, I'll tell you, you turn that thing on and you still have to respect it just like you would even if it didn't have it. It's just instinctual. But if the blade is on full power and it trips, I would not use that blade again without first sending it to a professional sharpener, because a tooth might crack and could throw the blade out of balance. I had one time when it tripped on me and I had already shut the saw off and the blade was spinning down. I had the dado set in and it was just barely almost stopped, you know, and I just reached over a little too soon and it still tripped the cartridge. The blades weren't even going fast enough to embed themselves in the cartridge. It just scratched it. But normally, if it's on at full power, it's going to embed itself real deep in that cartridge. That's what I would do.
All right, Jim. Well, thanks a lot. I'll bring Mr. Taylor Howell on the phone, on the line, if he's on here. Are you here, Taylor?
Yes, sir. You got me?
Oh, we got you now. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are y'all?
Good. This is kind of a unique thing. I've been looking forward to this because everybody that I've had on this call up till now, I've known, at least on the phone. But Taylor is a new member, and when I was interviewing him to make sure he wasn't a robot, just trying to get into all of our secrets, I talked to him for just a little bit, and I thought Taylor was kind of interesting. So Taylor is from Texas, but I forgot what part of Texas you're from, Taylor.
I am in Central Texas, kind of right between Waco and Austin, right off I-35 a little ways. Yeah, pretty much Central Texas.
Are you married?
I am not. I do have a fiance, though.
Oh, he's just putting it off. I see.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Remember, you guys have a ranch in Texas, right?
Yes, sir.
And what do you raise on your ranch?
Man, we got a little bit of everything. We've got mostly horses, a couple donkeys. There's some cows out here, a bunch of dogs, barn cats, a goat, you know, stuff like that. My fiance actually is a barrel racer competitively and professionally. We spent a lot of time doing that. And that's really kind of what got me interested in woodworking, was being out here. You know, a lot of the stalls and stuff that the horses stay in is made from anything from 2x4s all the way up to 2x12s and some metal C-channel and stuff like that. And horses are like having a bunch of wild children. So it doesn't take them much to eat through a piece of wood or kick through one. So it's constantly replacing boards amongst the puzzle of, you know, how they're put together. So that's kind of where it started. And then I just got good at it, I guess, and started venturing out into other things. But yeah, before that, when I turned 18, I actually professionally rodeoed. I was a bareback rider.
Hey, Taylor, when did you lose your sight?
I was 18 months old.
See, that's what I thought. So you were a competitive rider even when you couldn't see.
Yes.
You're crazier than I am. I want you to know that. Me and horses do not get along. That's actually pretty cool. You had mentioned something about that. There's another thing that intrigued me. So what did that entail, Taylor?
Basically, you...
Is this like the bucking horses kind of thing?
Yes, yes. It's a bronc.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, you have what's called a riggin, which is, imagine like a suitcase type handle that straps onto the horse, and you got a big thick leather glove, and you wedge your hand in there and you nod your head and see if you can make it 8 seconds. I got to the level where I was by myself flying around the country, going to all these rodeos, really making a living at it for a little while. So,
well, that's pretty cool. That's just anybody sighted or not. Okay. Anybody that could do that. I take my hat off to you, but I think you're all nuts. Just so you know.
Yeah, we get that a lot.
I bet you do. It's kind of like right up there with skydiving, you know, jumping out of a perfectly good plane for no reason.
Yeah, I don't see the point in that one, but.
So you have a shop there in Texas, and I know you do a lot of ranch work. Of course, you got a lot of stuff to do, but you do some regular woodworking too, correct?
Yeah, when I quit rodeoing and stuff because we decided to have a barn, we've got 20-something horses here right now. I can't be gone all the time with the amount of work and stuff that's around here. And I guess what they say when you assume, but I would assume that, a lot of people in situations like, all of us having a regular 9-to-5 job that pays well is a little tougher than it would be for most.
Right.
So, yeah, just as I kind of got good at fixing stalls and stuff like that, I just started getting ideas and really started like building saddle racks to hold saddles and stuff like that. And then I didn't really realize how open the field was and how it could be adapted really to my situation. And once I kind of did a little bit of research and got into it, I was like, man, there's no reason why this isn't capable of producing some income maybe. So I'm not quite there yet, but working on it, trying to upgrade to some better table saw. The one I have right now was given to me a while ago, and it's a old from the Sears days Craftsman.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even get parts for no more. It doesn't have the rack and pinion fence and all that kind of stuff, so it didn't come with the blade guards or the riving knife, or it's actually quite dangerous, but I live on the edge anyway, so it never really bothered me. But so yeah, looking into getting some better stuff to make more accurate cuts, make the finished product a little better where it's worth some people's hard-earned money to want to pay for it. So
right, yeah. My rigid saw, I bought that saw back in 2009 used for $150, and it's been a great saw. But couldn't get parts any longer for that one. When I first got it, I actually went out and bought the fence off their parts list and just put it together. But after I did all that, I realized their fence sucked. Now, not their fence, their guard. Excuse me, their guard. Fence was great. It's the best part of that saw was the fence. But I didn't realize I couldn't really use that guard system because they had that riving knife came all the way from the back of the saw, and you just could never keep it lined up with the blade. I didn't use that, but it was a good saw all that time until it just, I don't know exactly, maybe the bearings were getting bad or something, but it just wasn't cutting very straight anymore. I was making rocking chair rockers with it for whatever reason. I never quite figured out what caused that, but I got a little tired of that, but upgrading tools, that's just something you do as a slow process, Most of my whole shop is, when I started out, was all used tools. And I still have use it all the time. So you make some cutting boards and that kind of thing, Taylor?
I've started to kind of venture in that route, cutting boards, just kind of small stuff.
Right.
I don't have a dedicated shop space. I've got a room that's part of the barn, actually, that's really considered the office. I just have a desk in there. That's where I glue stuff up and all my tools and stuff are stored. And when I want to do something, I kind of have to drag it out to the breezeway of the barn. And this is something that I'm, as far as woodworking at a higher level, just getting into. So eventually I enjoy it enough to, want to invest and actually have a dedicated space for it and stuff. But right now I just don't have that yet.
I understand.
But it don't matter. As long as it cuts straight and you got a place to put your pieces, you can really do anything, I think.
That's very true. Yep. My first shop back then, it's more like craft work, but heck, it was a 10x10 room in my basement. Yeah, that was all I had and the space for it. So it could be done, just a little at a time. So I want to go back to your ranch and your horses. So how do you handle all these horses? See, the not seeing in woodworking doesn't bother me. Not seeing around these large animals kind of freaks me out. But I have a bad experience with horses. Like I said, they're not my favorite animal. But how do you manage that? Was there any trick to it, or just because you've been doing it all your life, you know what you're doing?
Yes, there is a little bit of a trick, but a lot of it just comes from experience, right? Growing up around it, learning a few different lessons the hard way.
Right.
But a lot of horse events, or any competitive events, anytime you're around horses, a lot of it is energy based. It's kind of one of those, they know if you're afraid of them and they will take advantage of that. And then just the experience of being around them, knowing just kind of how they move, how their body works. And a lot of the horses we have here, they're handled every day, not just by me. So they're all pretty tame. They're not going to, charge you or kick you or nothing. They're all broke competition style horses. So there's that. Even as far as like riding the bareback horses and stuff, man, it's, everybody always describes it. It's, you're in a fist fight for your life, basically, whether you can see or not. I mean, they're so strong and so powerful, and to be in a correct form and to do it the way it's scored and everything like that, you've got your chin tucked, and even talking to everybody else that can see, it's all muscle memory, it's all feel, it's all reaction. If you're looking at something and thinking about it, you're already too late, and that's when you get yourself in trouble, get bucked off. Yeah, a lot of people said I was more at an advantage because I didn't have the choice to even have to think about what I was doing. I just had to kind of react to it. And I don't know if that was true or not, but it's a lot of just sensing. It's a lot of kind of like using a table saw. If you think you might get yourself in trouble trying to cut something too thin and you're uncomfortable with it, odds are it's probably best to try to figure out something different, right? And
right.
Same thing with horses. If you're afraid of it, then you might think about going about it a different way. Yeah, other than that, I mean, a lot of it is, it's by feel anyway. So it's not too much different. But yeah, I think the experience of just being around it my whole life is probably a...
Were you raised on a ranch then, Taylor?
I actually was not. I actually raised in the city, shoot, up until I was 14 or 15. And when I got to high school, we had moved kind of to the country. And my mom grew up with horses and was into showing and stuff like that. So it kind of started out as one of them things. You know, we moved and had some property and she kind of wanted to get all of us kids into it. And it was something I took a liking to. And when we started that journey, I've always been the one. I didn't want any special treatment, right? I wasn't in special ed classes or anything like that. I went to all six periods every day, just like everybody else. I kind of went to school in the time where a lot of the technology was really starting to come out. I think JAWS was really starting to improve. The empowered note takers and stuff were really starting to come around, kind of transitioning from the old noisy braille writers.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big help.
So that gives you back up. But Taylor, how old are you?
I'm 28.
Just a kid. You sound much older. I guess it must be all that experience with the horses or something. I don't know.
I think, you know, a lot of it was the way I was raised. And that goes back to I didn't really want to be any different, you know.
Oh, sure.
I wanted to be involved, right? I was athletic and stuff. So I was actually on the varsity high school football team. That caught a lot of traction, drew a lot of attention from the local media, news. And there was actually a segment that aired, I don't remember if it was on CBS or Fox or NBC or whatever, but they aired it nationwide actually at the halftime of one of the NFL Sunday night games.
I'll be darned.
So that was pretty cool. And I did want to maybe go to college on a football scholarship just because I wanted to be competitive, wanted to be the best. And then I kind of realized, like, I'm not as big as a lot of those college athletes. And if I'm going to do something, I want to do it, you know, all the way. I want to have the chance to go to the NFL at that point. And I just kind of thought, like, that's kind of unrealistic. So that's when I got the bright idea to get on a bucking horse. And that's kind of where that took off. And I realized, like, man, if I could stay healthy and do it, I could go to the finals. And I did make some of the regional finals and made a bunch of money doing it. So that's kind of where that switched. And then met my now fiance, and she was into barrel racing. And yeah, we've been together for 10 years now, I think. Yeah, it just try to be normal.
Yeah, well, that's perfectly understandable. I think we most of us shoot for that, you know. But how does one, since you weren't really raised, I mean, with it, how does one learn to be a bronc rider? They have schools for this?
They do. A lot of times, you know, you kind of have to travel. I've been to one in Laramie, Wyoming in January and never been so cold in my life.
I bet Wyoming, yeah.
And I've been to one in Houston, Texas and never been so hot in my life.
So these are schools or like places you go for training?
Yeah. And then they're called dummies, right? They're stationary. They call them spur boards where you put your equipment on it and you practice your muscle memory technique of where, I don't know if y'all can imagine, but when a horse bucks, it typically puts its head down to the ground. And every time a horse bucks or jumps, it moves forward. Sometimes 6 feet, sometimes 16 feet, just depending on the style of the horse. And so the idea is when the horse jumps in the air, you drag your feet kind of up to in front of your rigging handle, which is kind of like where the neck and the back meet. And the idea is to reset your feet up in the horse's neck before his front feet hit the ground. And so what that does is as that horse is jumping and moving forward, you're pulling your feet back and then using that momentum to fire your feet back forward so that you can kind of keep up with the forward momentum of the horse. And there's technique and timing and everything involved in that. So they have bucking machines that are stationary. They just buck up and down. They have some that you can drag behind a four-wheeler, and that's about as most close as you could get to the real thing. But a lot of things, it's the best practice is just to get out there and do it. Yeah, there's schools, and I mean, I was going to 70, 80 rodeos a year, leaving home on a Wednesday, flying around the country, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, getting on four or five bucking horses a week, come home, rest up, get all the soreness out, be in the gym. So it's a lot of dedication, and it's one of those things you really have to want it, because if you don't want it, that's when you get hurt, because it's very physically demanding. It's very dangerous, whether you can see or not. It's it's a dangerous event. It's a dangerous sport. Yeah, there's schools, and you know, I had some of the stationary stuff, and man, I'd spend 1.5, 2 hours a day just practicing the muscle memory to speed up my reaction time. And you know, just like anything, woodworking, whatever, the more you do it, the better you get.
Right. I could see that. So how many bones have you broken? That's a loaded question.
As far as broken bones, actually, I broke my left wrist in the joint and had to have surgery and pins put in it and stuff. But that was kind of my worst injury. Other than that, I've had a couple of concussions and just been beat up, sore, been hitting the ground hard, you know.
I could imagine.
And especially in bareback riding, even you can make the prettiest ride, be the highest score, win the deal, and it still jerks the crap out of you and beats you up. So you're sore a lot of time. I was going to the chiropractor because my right arm was always longer than my left just because of the yanking you were taking from it.
What is it? You know, I only know this stuff from TV and movies, right, and stuff like that. So are those injuries like broken bones, is that something that's common, or is it really not as common as we think?
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when you get hurt, but that when is very spread out, right? It's as long as you're in shape and doing your fundamentals correctly, putting in the time, putting in the effort, you know, sometimes there's just things that are unavoidable that happen, just like anything. I know my grandma broke her ankle stepping down a stair. Like,
oh, sure. Yeah.
It just, you know, it's one of those things. And that was when I broke my wrist. I had actually ended up winning the rodeo and got off on the pickup horse and just lost my footing in the dirt and fell on it. I didn't get bucked off or anything. It was just one of them weird deals.
Oh, we don't.
So yeah, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. You know, I would kind of relate that to the table saw. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when you scare the crap out of yourself and have to go change your underwear because you got too close to the blade or had kickback or something. You know, it happens to everybody. So
yeah, I think you're right there. Yep. Sooner or later, if you do it long enough, it will.
Yep.
You'll set the board somewhere, you know.
Yep.
Well, that's just really, it's just really interesting. I've never met or even talked to anybody that did that. You know, we don't, but it's pretty cool though. I get a kick out of it. I talked to a lot of, since I retired the last 15 years, before that, I don't think I ever talked to another blind person, but over the last 15 years between this and some other organizations I was in, I've met a lot of blind people, and it's just amazing how many ways there are to lose your sight, but then, because that's almost infinite. It's incredibly broad as ways that people can lose their eyesight, you know. But it's also how people adapt. Some people like you are kind of on the, I don't know how to pronounce it or say it, but kind of on the outside of the high side edge of doing things all yourself, right? And are being involved in normal, quote unquote, normal things. Right. And then there's, you know, there's other people who, I guess, have just been sheltered, you know, and stuff all their lives. So it you run the gamut with everything, you know, with people.
And, you know, with the whole sheltered thing, I did not grow up sheltered. We would, families, Easter, holiday week, Labor Day, Memorial Day, we grew up, you know, going to the desert out in the Mojave Desert out west and, you know, would take the sand rails and dune buggies and dirt bikes and stuff. We would put a radio in my dirt bike helmet and I would follow my dad, you know, just follow the noise in front of me. And man, we'd go out riding for 2.5, 3 hours, going to the lake, wakeboarding and skiing. And I actually owned my own boat for a while because I loved to bass fish. So stuff like that. And my mom, really a lot of my family, especially with the whole football thing and with that going nationwide, my mom actually got quite a bit of backlash on people calling her a bad parent for exposing me to the danger. And it was mostly people coming from kids that they would adopt their kid out of PE because they, you know, didn't want them to get hit with a soccer ball or something, to where I would ditch English class and go play PE twice because I wanted to be outside and
yeah,
living on the edge. So
it's a good point though. That's true. And I bet she did, you know. It's just people have weird preconceptions of things. I mean, we all know we all been treated certain ways by people who just don't know any better, right?
Yeah.
And then there's some people are just more ignorant about that than others.
But, yep, for sure. And that's kind of where, like, I, you know, wanted to become a member here, you know, with the woodworking and stuff, because up until really you know, recently, the last couple of months, I didn't realize how many, you know, actual blind woodworkers there actually was. It's not uncommon once you kind of dig through the weeds a little bit and kind of do some research. And that's kind of how I came across this, because I don't know a lot of the jigs and stuff that make life easier. I've kind of had to figure everything out. So I'm kind of curious as to, you know, what everybody else is doing to make their lives easier. And it wasn't but just a couple of weeks ago, I even just doing some basic research came across the click rule.
Yeah.
There's some stuff out there that has existed for quite a while that, because I've been so normal, but because I've always had that mentality of I'm going to try to do it just the same way everybody else would. I mean, for the longest time, I would take a regular DeWalt tape measure and hold it up to something that I thought I wanted to be close to, and then lock the tape measure and then take a razor blade and make a mark there. And that's where I, you know, how I'd get my measurements. I had no idea if it was 21 3/8 or whatever. It just, and then I did a lot of repetitive stuff. I kind of figured out stop blocks on my own without even realizing that sighted people even use stop blocks. So
sure, yeah.
It's been a big learning process really too. And there's some of the stuff out there that I'm like, man, even sighted people are doing some of the same stuff that blind people are doing. It's all just a part of that trait, I guess.
People ask me, you know, if you do woodworking, and there again, people don't know any better. Woodworking, most rehab centers, blind rehab centers actually teach it. Most of the VA centers do. And we got a couple guys on this list that are instructors in those places. But the only thing that we really do, when I tell people, that's different is just how we measure and mark.
Yeah.
Other than that, everything else is pretty much the same. I don't have a lot of different tools or anything like that. And everybody, if you do woodworking long enough, you spend, I think you spend maybe a quarter of your time making some kind of jig to make your, you know, to, especially if you're doing repetitive things, to make your life easier and repeatable. You know, it's the repeatability of that kind of thing. And are there some things you just can't do, you know, freehanded without having something like this? So there's a lot of creativity, just how to get things done. But that's everybody.
I try to explain to people too. One of the biggest questions I get, like I'll be working and somebody new will come to the barn or something, and they'll just kind of stand there and watch. And they'll ask my fiance all the time, aren't you afraid of him cutting his finger off? Or aren't you afraid of this? Or how do you do that? Or, you know, that's dangerous. I don't even do that. And I can see, well, what a lot of these people don't realize is you do have that luxury and you take that for granted. I'm almost more cautious doing anything and way more self-aware than sighted people are.
Oh, yeah. You have to be.
And I would assume that's a pretty common consensus among everybody here that's listening. You have to be more reliant on other things. You just pay more attention. And that's, I think, where a lot of injuries, even with sighted people, it's just, they just assume, oh, I've done this 100 times. And it's just that one time their finger gets a little too close. And then they're like, well, man, I've done it 100 times. What was any different there? Well, maybe you were paying just a little bit less of attention that time.
Yeah. Last year, I seriously thought about quit woodwork because I actually stuck my thumb in a router bit. And the router table is my favorite things. I love using router, and I've never been hurt on it, but I just lost focus and it bugged me so much. It's like, maybe I'm too old for this crap, you know, because I can't, to this day, I do not know why or how I managed to do that. It really bugged me. And I didn't do anything for about 6 months really in the shop. And it wasn't a real serious injury, but it, you know, it got my attention. And yeah. It's like, what the hell? You always have to be aware of your surroundings. And personally, I don't like to work when other people are in the shop with me too much because, well, one thing, I'm always running into them. Yeah. You know, because they don't know to get out of, you know, that we move, still move pretty quick, even though we can't see. But sometimes it's just too much of a distraction, you know, for me personally.
I don't mind it so much. I'll have music on and stuff, but I don't have it blaring in the shop or whatever. I like to hear the tools work, right? And I like to really focus in on, especially on the table saw. If you hear the RPMs up start bogging down, you know, you might be fixing to run into an issue here in a second.
Right, sure.
So hearing is a big one that I try to keep it quiet. I do the same thing. Both of my younger brothers are diesel mechanics, so I know a little bit about that too. I mean, me and my fiance have a, you know, Chevy Duramax dually that she pulls a big 40-foot living quarters horse trailer and stuff. And so, I mean, I've had to change tires on the side of the highway before. And, you know, just listening to stuff like that, listening to the turbos whine and knowing just audible things like that. And a lot of people don't pay attention to that. And I've caught a lot of things. Something just doesn't sound right. It's never sounded like that before. And you get out and check it. It's like, oh, well, that tire's low. That would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a big one for me, is definitely the audible cues on a lot of things.
Absolutely. Yep. So did you get yourself a click rule?
I have not. I've been saving up the money trying to decide what I want to buy. So really all I have right now is, I believe it's made by Tape King, the talking tape measure, and that's, I don't really know how accurate those are. I don't know if anybody else has them, had any issues with them.
I have that and the cobalt. I hear different things with people, but I got to tell, I find them to be just as accurate as most any that kind of tape measure, you know.
A lot of times, instead of measuring, I'll cut a scrap piece. If I need something 19 and a half inches, I'll just cut one scrap piece. And then that's, if I'm making 19 and a half, then I just put them together, flush it up on the end and butt it up against the blade and let it rip. So,
well, yeah, and that's very true. And a lot of times, unless we're making something that has to fit someplace in a specific place, the true actual final dimension isn't as important as that they all be the same, you know, that they're all, so everything comes out square. If it ends up being 23 and a half instead of 24, that's okay, but it needs to be a square.
I think it was on one of the other, just to kind of get an idea, like I said, I've never done this, you know, type of thing before, as far as like this, I don't know if this is a podcast or call or, you know, whatever it's called, but so I kind of went back through the archives and was listening to, you know, some of the other ones. And I think somebody had said that said accuracy isn't as important as consistency. I'd never really thought about it that way, but I kind of tend to agree with that.
And that's true, because like I said, most of it, unless you're making a piece that has to fit inside of a specific area, like I said, as long as it, you know, if you got two sides of a box and they're both the same length, what the exact length for me, it doesn't really matter that much. It just matters that they're the same.
Right.
You know, so everything comes out square.
I have a hard time being, I want everything perfect all the time. And sometimes I know that 16th of an inch is off or that eighth inch of it, you know, is off. Most of the time, people don't notice it unless you point it out. So,
right. Yeah.
That's a tough one for me.
I think we suffered that a little bit because we can feel things. Okay. It's actually a kind of a handicap, if you will.
Yeah. I would agree.
Because we feel things where a sighted person would never see what we're feeling.
Right.
You know, a defect in a piece of wood, we can feel a little line that they cannot see, but it will drive me crazy.
Yes.
Right. And that's one of the biggest challenges that I honestly think is it's just some things just really aren't visual or can't be really seen that well, but it can drive us crazy.
Yeah. It really irritates me when it comes to standing too, because I can feel one little imperfection that nobody, then they're like, I don't see what you're feeling. So I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's sometimes it's like I said, it's a detriment to us because it can try to get things absolutely perfect and drive us a little bit crazy sometimes.
100%.
I really enjoy talking with you, Taylor. I don't know if you have anything else that you wanted to talk about or anything.
No, I mean, not unless anybody has any questions. I don't know if that's
a
thing y'all do or not. But
no, you know, Daryl cannot decide what the hell to call this thing anyway, okay? We used to do them and they were kind of like conference calls kind of things, and that gets a little bit difficult because it's hard to everybody talking at once kind of thing. So, but I don't know what to call this, like I said, a podcast or whatever. Back when we were first doing these things 20 years ago, there was no such thing as a podcast. So
right,
you know. No, if anybody wants to have any questions to Taylor or about anything else, just you can unmute and chime in now if you'd like to. And by the way, Taylor, you're going to make a box for our box challenge, right?
Yeah, I was actually going to send you an email when we got done and get the information on that. I would
all right.
I'll definitely give that a try.
I swear I have to beat this over people's heads.
I just want to say some of the stuff that you're doing is exactly what the click ruler does. You know, you set the click ruler up for 19 and a half and you set it on the edge of the board and butt it up to the blade. When it goes tink, cut. You know, so it's just like setting up your own template, just like you're doing. Once you get one board, use that as your guide. And that's what the click ruler does. It's a handy tool. Always remember to remove it from the area that you're going to cut because they do cut and they make a lot of noise.
I got a half one in my shop right now. I keep it around just to remind me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's an expensive mistake to make, I feel like.
Yeah, it is. And it'd be really expensive with this damn saw stop because not only that'll cost you another couple $100 just for the blade and the brake. So
I really like what you were saying about, you know, hard-earned money, what people will pay for and stuff, and, you know, doing stuff. You're doing it out of necessity, utility, and all that stuff. So good for you. Good for you on all the stuff that you've achieved and stuff. When I was teaching, I always noticed when a student came in that had drive, you were just going to show them a few tips, tricks, and tools of the trade, and they were going to take it, harness it, and go with it. So it seems like you've done that for a lifetime. So welcome to the WW4B.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, definitely appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And definitely, we'll probably be reaching out on that chat deal or whatever, to just kind of see what everybody else is doing. Because like I said, I didn't realize how big really that the community is when it comes to that kind of stuff, and really what the potential, or, you know, what the capabilities really are. And I think a lot of companies I've researched, I think they've designed a lot of things that are so easily adapted to visually impaired or, you know, no sight people. And I don't even think that was really in their intent for the design. It just, you know, like we were talking about it, there is so many similarities between being sighted and not sighted that I don't think some of them were ever even designed to be that way, but it just happened to be. And as long as you can figure out how to make them work for you, I think what is out there, you know, as far like that Tape King tape measure, man, that's the most expensive tape measure I've ever bought. And I try to take care of that one for forever, because
you're probably not marking that one up with a knife, are you?
Yeah, no, I try to be really careful there, because it's not like you drop it on the ground and you run down to the hardware store and grab another cobalt one for $10, you know. It's a
no, that was just, so far, knock on wood, has been pretty sturdy. But I've gone through 3 cobalt. The other company that makes it was called Cobalt out of Britain, and they're good too, but they're just they're a lot, heck of a lot cheaper. You can't actually buy 3 cobalts or just about for what you buy one tape king for.
Oh, wow.
But it could be less forgiving if you drop them, because they got a lot of plastic in the case.
Get what you pay for, just like with anything.
Yeah. But, you know, I've got both, and they both work. And when we were talking about the accuracy of it, I just think that they're all, I think it's as accurate as any tape measure is, you know, that you can see.
There's a guy on YouTube, a channel, I don't know if anybody's heard of him, but he's 731 Woodworks.
Yeah, I listen to that guy. Yeah. Matter of fact, I hope to have him as a guest one of these days.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome. I was actually going to reach out to him, because he's not too far from my neck of the woods. I think he's in Arkansas, and just kind of chit-chat with him, because in his videos, the way he breaks things down, he's one of my favorites, you know, to learn from and stuff, just his articulation of certain things. And even he said, he's like, whatever tape measure I pick up first for a project, he's like, I try to use that same brand, because he said the difference, they're not all equal. Like, even across the construction line, like, they're just not all equal.
No, they're not.
So I don't really think it matters.
I tell you what, the click rule, you know, it's what it means. It clicks. It has a little bearing, a ball bearing in there that clicks on every, it's 16 threads per inch on this standard rod. So every time you move it, there's a spring and a ball that clicks on that thread. You can hear it and feel it.
Okay.
You know, it'll measure 12 inches by itself.
Right.
And then you have extensions that you, but that is one of my favorite things when I'm doing repetitive things. But when I'm just breaking down lumber, you know, grabbing that tape measure is just so much quicker and easier. So there again, like most things, there's a place for both.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of like ripping down sheet goods with, you know, the circular saw, and right. I bought I believe it's made by Craig, the rip jig. I think that's what it's called or whatever, but it's got the straight edge, and it, you know, got a base that goes on your saw or whatever, and it'll go up to 24 inches. So you just set that, and that'll rip a straight line and a piece of plywood, you know, straight in half. And it's way easier to do that than it is to try to manage a 4x8 sheet of plywood on the table saw by yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you were old like us, me, you don't want to pick those things up all the time either.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's neat to find out what everyone else is doing. And that's like WW4B. You can pop a question on there and people will come out of the woodwork, literally come out of the woodwork. And someone's done it. Someone may have done it, or someone has an idea about it or something like that. And that, if you can grab a little something from someone's conversation, that makes all the difference in the world. So that's why I like tuning into the list.
I know one thing, somebody will definitely have an opinion about it, you know. No doubt about that.
This is Jim, and I just want to say, you know, Taylor, this WW4B group, I've been involved, you know, I subscribed to the email for gosh, since almost the very beginning. I don't contribute a lot, but I can tell you that you're not really going to find a better group of more experienced and professional level people right along with the beginners. And everybody's in, you know, encouraging and supportive, and everybody just wants to see people have success. And that's one of the reasons why I really like it. You know, there's no big controversies or anything like that. It's just all about supporting each other. Another thing I wanted to mention is down your way, there's a fellow that I really want to go see. He's a blind marksman, and he has developed a headset that gives you audible tones for marksmanship. You can look up, I think I did a search on blind marksmanship or blind shooting or something like that, and he came up. And It looks like a fantastic device. I really want to check out.
I do believe there's a guy maybe in the Houston area. It's been a minute since I've looked into that, but I believe his name's Mark. I don't know if it's the same person you're talking about or not, but there is a scope out there I know of that is, I guess, Bluetooth infrared. And if you were, you know, say in a deer stand and, you know, you're set up there waiting, somebody, you know, behind you can basically look at their phone or a computer or whatever and see what you're seeing through the scope. And they could tell you, you know, however you like your measurements called out or your calculations called out, you know, 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, little right, little left, little up, little down. And then, you know, they could, they're looking exactly what you would be looking at through the scope. And that's something me and my brothers have talked about, maybe kind of venturing in a little bit for this next hunting season. So that's definitely another one. We do a lot of hunting, dove hunting and deer hunting. Hogs down here in Texas is a big thing. So, and that's another one there, you know, my gun safety is probably better than most sighted just because I know what the consequences are if you lack on that. So, you know, whether you're sighted or not, you find yourself in situations in that lifestyle that you could have all the odds stacked against you regardless of your situation, and you just have to use common sense and prayers and
resources
and your resources, and you figure it out. Sometimes you have no choice, you just have to figure it out. So
yeah, that's right, you gotta just make the move and not worry about it.
100%.
Daryl, you awake?
What'd you say there, Jeff?
Daryl, if you ever wanted to go horseback riding, you see a saw stop makes a saddle stop. So if trouble hits, it'll eject you before you get hurt.
I always had more guts than brains. My neighbor has brought home this. Okay, I should call it hard. It was a damn pony. It's kind of a medium-sized.
This ain't in front of Walmart,
horse.
Is it?
But everybody was afraid to get on it, so I did. And of course, I've never been on a horse in my life. It just took off, you know, and it went where it wanted to go, and where it wanted to go was between these two trees that had a clothesline across it, and it took me right off that damn horse. And that's why I don't have this real lovable feeling about damn horses to this day because of that. Because he did that on purpose. You know, there was all this whole pasture run around, and he went right between those trees.
I've had that happen.
Well, Taylor, I appreciate you being on the call, and this was fun. Like I said, it's one of the things about me hosting these podcasts is sometimes, you know, we're going to talk about things that aren't just always woodworking, you know, but it all ties in. But you're an interesting person. I really enjoyed it. And I love your attitude too, by the way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And anytime I enjoyed it. It's definitely fun. Definitely something out of my character and out of my realm to really do. You know, where we live, there's my cell service is not great. And we're 10, 11, 12 miles to the nearest gas station and about 45 minutes to the nearest Lowe's. And we're not exactly, I'm pretty secluded. You know, I'm here by myself a lot of times all day, every day. So I'm a pretty quiet and just kind of do my own thing. So that, like I said, it was definitely a good one to experience. And anytime I'll be glad to come on, and I'll be tuning in every month as well.
Hey, so one more question, which I meant to ask earlier.
Yeah.
Football, what position did you play?
I got to do a little bit of everything, really. One of the ones I did the most often, which I was actually what my position was just for the, you know, there's 22 people on the field moving around. And when you got a helmet on and everything like that, your hearing is not your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I was technically the long snapper for like point after, touchdowns, and field goals.
I read your article.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was 10 years ago, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Man, that would have had to have been probably 2012, 2013.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. From Texas, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he is just a kid.
Yeah, I was a freshman, sophomore.
That's pretty cool.
Then I got to, you know, short yardage situations. I got to line up in the backfield and just run through people to pick up a yard or something. That was fun. That's what I like to do the most. I like, you know, people would be like, oh, he's not going to go anywhere. He can't even see you. Well, yeah, I'll just run right, you know, right through you. So they love using me for that. I had no fear of contact. So
the Bronx, you're another person has more guts than brains too.
Yeah, know? For sure. And I think I've lost even more brains through that process. So that doesn't help.
I know I have. I appreciate you being on the call, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys. We'll be in touch.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
Be sure to check out www4b.org, Woodworkers for the Blind. Become part of the community and learn from others. Hope you enjoyed. And until next time, bye-bye.